We have 11 working groups. Most of them have update sessions in CCNSO members meeting or in other open forums this week, so they may not need update in this session. Besides them, what I have on my list are which is an ICANN-wide geographic regions working group update by David, and incident response working group update by York. And any other updates necessary from other working groups? No. If not, let me pass the microphone to David.
Thanks. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I was a relatively young man when I first attended ICANN and made an aside comment to Chris that I didn't understand why the .ky was in the European region. And he said, why don't you look at it? Well, two working groups and five reports later, I'm still looking at it. But we're getting there. There is light at the end of the tunnel, folks. When I was asked to give an update originally, I was told I had 3 minutes. So I said, okay, fine, no slides. I will just say we have an open public meeting on Thursday. It's in room 161, which is on the floor below here. And it's at 10 o'clock till 11 o'clock on Thursday. And I was also going to tell you that the second of our three reports is out for public comment. There is a link from the agenda so that you can see it. Comments can be made up until the end of January. Please look at it and please let us have some comments. In our first report, we looked at where geographic regions were used throughout the ICANN organization. This second report looks at the reasons why they are being used and if they are achieving those results. And then the last report, which is the one we're about to work on now, is, so what should we do about it? Now, I've been given slightly more than 3 minutes, so I've just added a couple of the slides from that presentation or that discussion that we're going to have on Thursday, just as tempters. This is just as an idea of some of the things that we are going to be talking about. Way back when Pontius was a pilot, geographic regions were defined as an aid to ensuring a broad international representation on the ICANN board. And the makeup of the ICANN board should reflect the geographical and functional diversity of the internet. And the procedures for appointing board members were to be sufficiently flexible to permit evolution to reflect changes in the constituency of internet stakeholders. Now, if we look at the breakdown of users back in 2000 when that was said, that's what it looks like, the size of the users in each of the regions. See how it's changed to 2009, which is the latest figures I happen to have. You see, going back, oh, it wouldn't go back. There we go. That's 2000. That's 2009. Quite a change. And if you look to the future, the red lines show the existing internet users, and the green bits show the population. So in other words, the potential users. So you can see that in some of our existing regions, we're almost reached saturation point. So North America, not going to change much in the next 5-10 years. Asia, Australia, Pacific has got miles to go. So all I'm suggesting is that the changes are going to be, continue to be quite large. And of course, we haven't changed the makeup of the regions or the allocation of countries or representations on the ICANN board since 2000. So have we achieved the flexibility that reflects changes to the internet? That's just one of the questions that we will be looking at and addressing on Thursday. Put another way, are ICANN's current geographical regions consistent with international norms? Are there other structures equally or more consistent with international norms? Would dynamic ad hoc groupings be consistent with international norms? Do the present ICANN geographic regions and their use enhance or detract from ICANN's goal of reflecting the functional, geographic and cultural diversity of the internet at all levels of policy development and decision making? And what changes, if any, could be made to better reflect the cultural diversity of the internet? Those are some of the questions that we will be looking at and looking for feedback from you on Thursday. This is really where the rubber hits the road, and we will be recommending things that could change and impact upon the CCNSO as well as other organisations. So please, we need your help. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, David. If you have questions right now, please. Of course, you can ask him on Thursday. But if you want now, yes, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave, for an excellent overview of the issues. First remark is that it just struck me that especially the visual overview that you gave would fit quite well into the more general internet governance debates as well. I don't think this is just an ICANN board issue, although this is obviously the reason why you're doing that work.
No, I wasn't suggesting it was.
No, but as a suggestion, if next year you want to go to Kenya and present it there, I'm sure quite a lot of people would be interested in that evolution. And secondly, I don't know if I'm speaking for other people in this room as well, but for me it would be very helpful if we, and you probably already have done that 4 years ago, if we could get again the overview of countries, extensions that would be affected by any changes that might come from this process.
You can see some of that on Thursday. But, I mean, there's the fundamental question of should we be changing the number of regions? Do we need regions in their present form at all? Should we be looking at ad hoc groups so that if the islands in the Caribbean and the Pacific want to have a grouping, let's call a special interest group for small island states, why shouldn't they? If the Arab states wish to have an Arab special interest group, why shouldn't they? Why are we tied to sort of arbitrary regions that were created when ICANN was first founded that look as if they were based on IRRs? You know what I mean, I can't get it out. the regional registries. It was a good idea at the time, but even that, as soon as they then started moving to use the UN statistics thing, that it all got screwed up, basically.
Where does KI get its IP ranges from?
Sorry?
Do you get your IP ranges from RIPE? Or?
No, from...
Okay, thank you.
But that doesn't apply to the other Caribbean states. They're split.
All right, thank you. Any other specific questions now? Okay, thank you, Dave. Next up, that is from Jörg.
right?
Yeah, okay. So, hello everybody. My name is Jörg Schweiger. I'm currently chairing the Incident Response Working Group, and I'm happy to give you a short update of the achievements that have been made in the recent days since Brussels. Just to remind you once again, if you're not too familiar with the purpose of the working group, we are set out to implement mechanisms of the engagement of ccTLDs and the interaction of ccTLD registries during incidents, and for sure these are just incidents that impact DNS. Scope of our working group was to set up a repository of ccTLD contacts and channels of communication for incident response. As to this, we, in the first part of our working plan, define what we really consider to be an incident. And if you're curious to find out what we came up with, just look into the backup, because I do not want to go over that once again, because you already have been presented with that in Brussels, for example. Then we did define what we think the use cases for this contact repository are. We, by the way, did not come up with any escalation procedures or action paths. The working group was tasked to do so, but we just felt that any escalation procedures or any action paths would have been so generic that they just wouldn't be of any use, so we skipped that. What we did do, we did define the repository's data model to achieve the use cases, and right now, being in Cartagena, we are up towards the implementation of this specified contact repository. And there are a couple of decisions to be made at this stage. One would be, should we buy something or should we make a contact repository that is implement a solution? And the next question would be, once we got this contact repository, we have to come up with suggestions on who will run that contact repository, who will actually maintain it, and yeah, what would be the level of acceptable expenditure, and that would be by covered by whom. And by the way, what we did do in addition was just to see into the discussions referring to, yeah, should I really use that word, because I haven't heard it long time ago since Brussels, and that is the DNS cert initiative that has been quoted or invented by ICANN. Well, more into detail, make or buy decision for that contact repository. We basically came across two possible solutions, and I do have to admit that we didn't make a severe or detailed investigation on the market. What we did do is, two possible solutions just popped up, and one was Packet Clearinghouse, and we just haven't had the time to take a closer look into what Packet Clearinghouse might be offering. But what we did do is that we looked into a tool that is called Trusted Introducer. And this might be really interesting for the contact repository, as it is already being used, and that is by the so-called CCERT. And CCERT is the International Organization of Computer Emergency Response Teams. So that's quite familiar requirements that are behind the usage of this tool. And if you take a closer look at the tool, you will see that it almost immediately would meet the requirements that are set up by the contact repository, by the data model, and by the use case requirements. It might be even very easily adapted to some very special requirements. It's basically just a browsing tool where you can run through a list of alphabetically listed contacts. They do offer a secured, that is a PGP email communication, and they do offer not only internet-based communication mechanisms and channels, but also those ones who are not based or that are not based on the internet. Namely, they do provide us with voice communication and SMS. In addition, they would run their solution in two redundant data systems, data centers, so it's quite resilient, to put it in that way. Dark side of the moon is that there is sufficient cost incurred in that solution, and that is that each participant to be listed in this browsing tool would have to pay an annual fee of $1,400, and that there is a one-time setup fee from $1,300. Those would be the buy solutions. For sure, one can think of implementing whoever that's going to make the contact repository, and that might just be yet another browsing solution, for example, or it might just be a database solution where you can just easily query contacts and maintain them and renew your data.
And the price you were quoting is the price to become a full member of the Trusted Introducer. So I don't know if it's feasible, and I can try to contact through Terena to have access to the tool they're using. So what are we talking about here? To become another member of the Trusted Introducer scheme, that means that you are a cert, but you're not merely paying to be listed. You have to comply with certain requirements to be included. Or something else would be to look at the tool they're using and whether it is feasible to get it outsourced from them and fill it with our own internal information.
Yeah, but basically that's exactly what I've been talking about. Selecting this tool and custom it, or just to make it work for the requirements that have been set up by the working group for this contact repository. And what I just try to resume is that Trusted Introducer may very easily be adopted to these requirements, or it might even already fulfill those requirements. Okay?
But what I don't see is the point of paying. I mean, we are paying that fee for our dessert because we have one, but I don't see the point in getting the tool and paying the same annual fee that we are paying with a real cert.
Okay, yeah, now I do understand your specific situation, and I do know it's not only you. There are probably a couple of people in the room who are experiencing the same situation, right? This might be a point of negotiation between the supplier of the tool and, well, whoever's going to take the decision to take this tool, select another tool or whatsoever. So I just want to make clear there is a tool out there and that can easily be used. It is not said in this very point that this would be the solution we would suggest, or that this would be the solution that already has been decided for. Okay, Alberto? Okay. Which brings me to the point that there are, in fact, some must-have requirements we came up with, and those are functional as well as non-functional requirements. And those basic requirements the working group found in the upcoming tool must support for sure the envisioned use cases. It has to be high availability, high available, that is 24/7. It not only has to provide us with communication channels using the internet, but alternative communication channels as well. And one additional requirement would be that the data is kept up to date each and every time and second of the year. Anything else you could think of that is definitely a must-have requirement for this contact repository? Just feel free to make any suggestions right now or send me an email. Anyone right now? Okay.
My name is Roy Arends. Just to get back on this tool, Trusted Introducer, it doesn't actually look like a tool. It looks like a service. A service for teams to be included in the repository of C-certs. Not a standalone tool where friendly, cooperating CCTLDs can talk amongst themselves about incidents, if that makes any sense.
Meaning what? I just do not get the point. Still, it would be a solution to be used for the contact repository and just to exchange information which are up to date on one hand and which are available at each and every time. And that is exactly what you want. You want to make sure that you do know whom to contact, when and where, and with which means you should use. And basically, this is what Trusted Institution, as to my knowledge, seems to be offering.
Just to make my point clear, what happens next is, by using this tool, for instance, we not only share our data amongst ourselves, we share the data, the contact repository data, the who to contact, when to contact them, and how to contact them with the entire C-cert community. As long as that's understandable, then as long as that's a goal, then it's a proper tool.
Yeah, now you're interfering with the interests of Alberto. So he was pointing to, well, come on, we can use this very tool for the both purposes. And what you're currently saying is, oops, if we would do that in this way, then probably the community using those addresses would get larger than we would probably have been envisioning before. And I'm not saying that we should use this tool, and I'm not saying that we could use it as is. What I'm saying is it's a really good baseline to set up upon, and it has to be specified in which way this is really going to be used, if it's going to be used. For example, there are some objections concerning cost-wise.
Your observation is correct that my point is different from Alberto's.
Okay. So now then, we already tackled a critical issue in that working group at this point in time, I think. And this issue is that we feel that further steps can't be taken by the working group on its own, on itself, and that is due to the fact that if, for example, we would decide to use Trusted Introducer, and we take that as an example, then, for example, concerning financial issues, one could come up with a question like, who's covering those expenses? Will those expenses be covered by ICANN, for example, and ICANN would do it so completely, would expenses be covered by a mode where I can pay some money and the participants listed on those tools are paying the other amount of money that is due? You can think of sponsoring models, you can think of fixed price models, and so forth. So basically, this is the point where we came to the suggestion that we basically should pass along what we currently have, because we couldn't decide on financing and we couldn't decide on money that is beholded by ICANN or whomever. So what the working group is proposing is that the CCNSO Council or ICANN is due to suggest and seek input from this community on how we should finance a service like that that has to be implemented. And we feel that the CCNSO Council and ICANN has to further task a further examination, selection, and implementation of a contact repository that clearly is oriented at the data model that has been specified by the working group, at the use cases that are specified by the working group, and the must-have requirements you have just been presented. And finally, it seems like if that is accepted, there's no additional work to be done, and that will clearly mean that we could close down the incidence response working group. And that will be it.
Okay, any question? Any further questions? So, Jörg, as to your final points, is the working group going to suggest something to the CCNSO Council in writing next in the next opportunity, or are you intending this to be the one?
This is in writing, isn't it? I know. I just do not know how the formal criteria looks. Would you need anything in addition?
But we can just take this into the council tomorrow. Is that the idea? Okay. So we'll discuss it tomorrow. In the.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Jörg.
Okay. Thank you very much, Hiro. Thanks, Jörg, and thanks, Dave, for your patience, wisdom, and age. We're going to do delegation. No, we're not. We're going to do IDN PDP stuff now. And I think we're starting with Russia, are we not?
Yeah.
Who's doing that? So we're going to start with a presentation on the Russian experience of their IDN CCTLD in the fast track, and Irina is going to do that. So sit tight.
Thank you very much, Chris. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. I'm Irina Danili, and I'm from the Coordination Center of Internet. Can you hear me like this? Okay, thank you. And we are Russian registry, and we administrate two country code top-level domains, .ru and the idntld.rf. which was newly launched. I spoke here yesterday in this exact room, focusing mostly on the technical issues of the .rf launch experience, but today I will try to provide you more information on administrative and marketing issues. So here is a very brief background, like the history of our Sunrise period, which started almost a year ago, and we gave priority for the state authority and for the trademark owners, initially Cyrillic trademark owners, and then we had to expand this category to the other trademark owners who has non-Cyrillic trademarks or combined trademarks. And how we also decide that there are other categories that need to have priority, and these are federal mass media, company name owners, and many two other special categories. And this Sunrise period ended in September. And during the Sunrise period, we got 18,000 domains registered. Well, to be honest, maybe not all these categories were chosen right. Maybe we we gave priority to too many categories, because we definitely have gotten some headache about regarding it, and some troubles and some funny stories too. Like, for example, mass media. We realized that finally, that it's not that difficult to register an electronic mass media. It's not a long process in Russia. So we got a lot of requests for domain names from the mass media registered, maybe not to be a real media, not to be a newspaper, not to be a website, but just to get this web name, domain name. And as soon as our official body, which deals with registering with registration mass media, got like thousands requests, much more than they usually get, and they send us a notification. So we had very quickly to review this rule and to some changes in our process. Well, another story, and this is just a couple of fun cases, are what domain names were registered as a company names. It's not like how it sounds in Russia, but it just gives a picture. So what we learned is that the creativity of our people have no limits. But the conclusion is that probably you can't be good with everybody, and maybe there is no sense even to try. However, after the from the very beginning of our .rf story, we definitely were considering scenarios of how we will launch the open registration, the period when everybody can get a domain name. And definitely this is this is not a thing that happens every year. So this is the important day and important process for all the member, for everybody who is working on this, on the domain market. So the initial our initial idea was that we will run the Dutch type auction, like when the first day any domain can be purchased for 10 million rubles, the second day for 5 million rubles, the third day for like 100,000 rubles, etc. And we investigated this issue very deeply and actually developed the full set of documents describing that. And finally decided that we will not do that because of few reasons, and there were a few concerns regarding the implementation and the paperwork around this process, and also our antitrust committee voted for not doing that. And there were also voices saying that, okay, .rf is like
a national treasure. It was supported by the Russian government and Russian president, and it should be equally accessible by all the people. So you can't sell it for like 10 million rubles. It should have a price which is affordable for average citizen of Russia. So after we refused for after we gave up this idea, we were looking for other options how to launch this open registration. And actually, the main concern was that big volumes of the domains might be purchased by professionals at the market, not by ordinary people. And that so they will not be available. First of all, they will not be available for ordinary customers. And secondary, that these big volumes of requests will definitely cause a significant registry database load. So we are looking for different options. How can we manage these risks and how can we eliminate these concerns? And but finally, at the end of September, our board, which makes like fundamental decisions on .ru and .rf domains, approved the very simple scheme, which included price at at the same level as .ru domain. I mean price for a registrar, and it's about $2.3 per domain, per registrar price. And the registrar was puts his own price for end user customer. We also put some technical limitation just to ensure the stable work of the registry database, and put two administrative limitations. And the purpose of this limitation was somehow to limit again the purchasing big volumes of domains for reselling them. That was actually the main purpose. Okay, we launched on November 11th at 12 o'clock, and we were sitting, like, crossing our fingers, waiting first news from our technicians and watching, like, 40,000 domains first hour, 45,000 second hour, etc., etc. And we finally realized that, okay, at least registry database works good and stable. Domain are registered, and, well, nothing happens. At least it works. Great. So the first day we got more than 200,000 domain names, and today we are, well, yesterday we crossed 640,000. Here how it looks day by day, and again, we are adding 5,000 domains per day currently. If we look at the distribution of the domain names between organization and individuals, we see that 66% of registrants are individuals, and it's more or less similar to what we see in .ru domain names. It's the figure on the December 1st, and yesterday figure was already 46.5% of domain names are already delegated. They are up and running, and we haven't done analysis what are these domain names used for, but there are... the feeling is that most of them are definitely redirected to the current websites existing in .ru. Especially because of the strong governmental support, you can now almost every day read in the newspaper that, okay, this state authority have launched the Cyrillic website, or this newspaper or this TV channel have already have now Cyrillic website. And so among the domain names which are up and running today are these definitely the names of the CGIS, which are used by CGIS authorities, the names of the newspapers, but there are also like Health.ru or Mother.ru, and sometimes you can just see, okay, a one-page website thing that the website is under construction now, and here will be their website about the health, for example. Well, this is just a couple of examples. Like we have got almost 2,002 symbol domain names registered, and we have 5436 symbol domain names. Is that long? Well, actually, I have no idea who will use them and how. Probably we will check another day. Well, and definitely there. This is a successful launch, and thank you very much to everybody for the warm words congratulating us. But this is not only the success of the us as a registry, but also the success of the whole IDN program and of the Russian language and Russian country. But well, however, not all the people are happy with the results of the open registration. Since the very first day, we also are getting claims. And most of the claims are definitely regarding the domain name registration. Like initially, while discussing these rules, the approach taken by our organization and by our board was that the domain names should be registered for the end user customer. However, you know that there are popular names which everyone wants, yeah, like auto or music or job. Well, there are a lot of them. And definitely there were a lot of people that who would like to get this domain. And our approach was that this should be solved on the first-come, first-served principles. It is what our rules state. But that didn't happen. What we got is that one of our biggest registrars, actually the biggest one, has purchased quotas from the other registrars to get more domain names registered. The technical limit that we put, which I mentioned before, 4,800 domains, was the equal quota for every registrar to ensure that any of them, any of 20, had the equal access to the domain name data, to the registry database, and had equal possibility to register domains for its customer. However, one of them used the quotas of the others, and like for you, this is the left picture shows that Rusenter purchased registered during the first day 34% of the domain name. But if we include the quotas of the other registrars that he used, we will see that this is 56% of the whole of the all domain names registered in the first day. And this is now the subject of the antitrust agency investigations, because they have got claims from the customer and they started this investigation. We don't know the final result yet. It will be somewhere in the middle of December, so it's in the process now. And the bad thing, the most bad thing is that, okay, this 56% of domains, it's like more than 100,000 domains, yeah? And most of them were not registered for the end user customer, but they were registered by, so registrar took these domain names for himself. Like you, if you look in the Whois data, you see that registrar and registrant is the same company. Okay, registrar definitely can register domain for his own needs, like for the commercial needs of the company. But these domain names, a lot of them, at least 25,000, were registered for a selling through the auction. So the idea of auction that was cancelled by us and by our council during the pre-launch period against the rule was implemented now by the registrar itself. And we definitely see at least signs of malicious conduct and of broken rules. And we are investigating this case right now. We are far from making final conclusions, but at least we consider that this is probably a very bad practice. So we put an official announcement on our website, and it is also in press and in mass media, warning the customer from participating in these auctions. And we are getting more and more complaints every day. Well, another interesting story is about stop list. Our rules state that words contradicting public interests, humanity, and morality principles, in particular unspeakable words, cannot be used as a domain names. So, okay, but it's good to have this rule, but how do you implement it? Actually, Russian language is very rich, and well, there are... yeah, well, there are only four basic roots, but they can be used in combination with a lot of prefixes and suffixes. And when we asked one of the biggest world authority in the Russian unspeakable world for assistance, well, and he tried to compile this list for us, we found out that the potential quantity of combinations counts like 5 million combinations. Well, so what we did as a temporary solution, we just took a list from the internet, went through it manually, and put it in the database just to, well, at least to avoid these unspeakable words in the like first 10. Yeah? Okay, not to have unpredictable word as a first registered domain. And definitely, it's not the total solution of the problem, and we definitely have a lot of different variations in the list of domain name registered. But however, this is what we implemented, and our plan actually is to create a team of experts who would be able to deal with this issue and maybe do some judgment. Because we, as a registry, definitely don't want to be a judge. So we want to attract, to include some experts in this decision-making process. Well, that's the plan. Well, there are a couple of technical challenges facing not only RF, but also other IDNs currently. And the number one, as we see, is email issues, because currently the email address using Cyrillic domain looks like this, so it cannot be totally Cyrillic, and it's not only web email software issue, but it also has to deal with keyboard issue, like because the at sign in Russian keyboards are only in the English variant, and when you switch to Russian letters, there is no at sign, so somehow it should be changed also on the keyboard. Well, the second issue is with search engines. Today there is only one Russian-based search engine which has probably 10% of Russian market, which provides you their search results as a search result, their Cyrillic domain names. The others do not. And this is really important for the success of IDNs, because that's about the customer experience and what people feel using IDN, and if they will feel comfortable and they will, if they will be able to do easily what they were used to do in ASCII domain names, then it will be okay, and our IDNs will be even more successful than today. Okay, that's all that I have. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, welcome.
Do we have any questions? Youngham. I'm reminded of the glorious domain name in Australia, which is the company that owns a pen shop in Queensland, and their name of their pen shop is Pen Island. Yes. Work it out.
You said that you had a sunrise period for the governmental trademark.
Yeah.
Did you think about granting an advantageous giving the .ru existing .ru registrants some favored status?
No, we decided not to do that, and there are two reasons. First, there is no IDNs in .ru, so all the .ru websites are ASCII. They are written in Latin figures, and actually to put corresponding letters between our Cyrillic and Latin, like make this transition. Sometimes it's easy, but sometimes it's very difficult. For example, like borscht in Russian, it can be written by Latin letters in 9 or 8 different ways. So we decided not to do that.
Anyone else? Yep, we have over there.
Anyway, thank you for your presentation. My name is Dongman Lee from Korea. I have I want to ask you about how much the traffic of the name resolution for dot, comparing to dot RU versus I don't know how you call it, the same as Russia, right? RU, right?
Traffic to.
Name resolution.
Name resolution.
Because the reason why I'm asking that, because we, 2, 3 or 4 years ago, we opened up the Korean name.kr. We got lots of registration, but actual the resolution traffic is less than 5% compared to English name.kr. So we're going to introduce the .Korean, .Hanguk, probably early next year. So, but we're not sure about how domain names will be used. So I just want to know how Russian people really utilize your Russian name-based domain names.
Well, I'm not ready to answer yet because I don't have this statistic currently. Well, I have some figures on who is queries, which I showed yesterday. But, well, we can just keep in touch and I will find out it for you. I apologize that I can't answer today. That's all? Okay, thank you very much. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Hira.
Okay. Maybe the same kind of question as the Dongman Lee. Do you have such statistics as how many percentage of the domain names have their unique web pages and how many are redirected to existing pages?
Not yet. This investigation is in our plan and we will run it in the next few months. Well, so just 3 weeks past it, we were really busy with other issues. But the feeling is that they are mostly redirects. because it's just too early to have a regional web sites on these pages.
My question is actually an extension of that. Even if you don't have specific figures, did you see any type of increase in resolution requests since you've launched the Sierra League?
Sure. We see a large increase in the DNS queries and in Whois queries.
Do you have an approximate figure?
No.
Okay. I think we're finished.
Thank you very much.
Irina, thank you very much. Okay, the next bit of our IDN CTTLD festival is Hiro, who chairs the second IDN working group, which is the structure IDN working group, the working group that's looking at structural issues for the CCNSO that come with the introduction of IDN's membership structure and so on. So Hiro will present the report from that working group. 1 minute joke, okay. See, you just can't think of one when somebody asks you to do that. It's just not possible.
Okay, thank you, Chris. This is a first report to the members, CCNSO members meeting about the IDN CCPDP Working Group 2, which is about the inclusion of IDN CCTLDs in the CCNSO. The working group's purpose is to report on changes to Article 9 and the relevant annexes in the ICANN bylaws to include IDN CCTLDs as full members in the CCNSO on equal footing as the current members. It means that the structure of CCNSO in the era of having IDN CCTLDs as its members. So issue report is here, and interim report was published in around 10 days ago. And the working group's members are here from various regions. And the working group identified potential issues, such as the first one is membership definition, and the second one is roles of members, and the sub-issues are eligibility and selection of counselors to the CCNSO Council, and initiation of PDP and voting. And the third one is quorum for voting and the scope of PDP as defined in Annex C. So these are the issues identified by the working group. So I'm going to explain one by one from now. And the first one is membership definition. And qualifications to be a member of CCNSO. And the current bylaw says that a CCTLD manager is the organization or entity responsible for managing an ISO 3166 country code top-level domain. And The CCNSL shall consist of CCTLD managers that have agreed in writing to be members of the CCNSL. And this means that an organization managing IDN CCTLD is not regarded as a CCTLD manager by the current bylaws, because it says that the CCTLD manager should be should manage the ISO 3166 country code. And therefore, an organization managing an IDN CCTLD is not qualified to be a CCNSO member. But when IDN CCTLDs are coming, or we've already had some, so we have to solve this. And the solution space is, first, the basic principle is IDN CCTLD manager should be a CCTLD manager. So, change should be given to the bylaws so that the managers of IDN CCTLDs are regarded as CCTLD managers and qualify as CCNSO members. So this means that the bylaws should be changed to accept IDN CCTLD managers as CCNSO member. And second A is about eligibility and selection of CCNSO counselors. Potential issues is the current bylaws says about no requirements to qualify as a potential counselor. Anybody can be a potential counselor. And any CCNSO member may nominate and or second a potential counselor, and a candidate needs to be nominated by a CCNSO member and seconded by another member from the same region. This is what the current bylaws said. Therefore, for example, if one ASCII CCTLD and five IDN CCTLDs are delegated in the same territory, so six CCTLDs are in the same territory, the territory can nominate and second three counselors in the geographic region. Just one territory can nominate three, because one nominate one and one second the same person. So if six, we have six members in the territory can nominate nominate and second three counselors. So this means that even three individuals residing in one territory can be candidates at the same time if the CCTLD managers in the territory behave so. If all the six CCTLD managers behave to have three candidates from that territory, they can do so. I don't know if this is good or not, but the solution space, maybe the alternative one is just one counselor from one territory. Maybe this is good. For example, candidate with highest vote among the candidates in the territory wins. And the second alternative is voting can solve the issue eventually after the voting if the principle only one vote per territory is safeguarded, if more than one nomination or seconding come from one territory. I'll talk about the voting later and come back to this point. And initiation of PDP. The current bylaws says that the CCPDP can be initiated by at least 10 members of the CCNSO. Therefore, it's becoming easier to initiate PDPs because we are going to have, we already have some IDN ccTLDs, and we're going to have more. So it's becoming easier because just 10 is becoming a small percentage of all the members. And territories with more CCNSO members have more power of influence in initiating PTPs. Right? So this means that just one territory, if it has 10 or more CCNSO members, can initiate PTP. So solution space, the working group listed four alternatives here. One, replace the number 10 by minimum percentage of the CCNSO members. Or two, introduce a ceiling on the number of managers from one territory. Three, 10 members should be associated with different territories. Four, leave it as it is. And now voting. I think I have 3 pages for voting because it's the most important one for us. The current bylaw says that up to one CCNSO member per territory. We have only ASCII CCTLD, so ASCII CCTLD manager can be a CCNSO member. This is what it says. And one vote per CCNSO member. So the conclusion is one vote per territory. Okay? This is what we have in the current bylaws. In the ASCII-only CCTLD era. So, therefore, inclusion of IDN CCTLD managers in CCNSO members would shift the balance of one vote per territory, which might be envisioned at the time of CCNSO creation. See that the if one territory, in this case the territory can mean the country or territory. If one territory have 10 IDN CCTLDs, so and they if they can vote, each CCTLD manager can vote, can cast one vote, the territory can cast 10 votes or 11 votes, including the ASCII. So basic assumption, if we have this kind of basic assumption, IDN and ASCII CCTLD managers should be treated equally, and this implication is the IDN and ASCII CCTLD managers in a territory should have equal voting rights, at least at the level of CCNSO. So I don't know whether locally how they are weighed, but at least from the view of CCNSO, IDN and ASCII should be treated equally. So the solution space may be when more than one CCNSO member from a territory take part in voting, their collective vote counts as one. So, for example, for N voting members from the same territory, each member gets 1 divided by N votes. This is the first alternative. And the second one is, consider each organization managing CCTLD as a unit of membership of the CCNSO, having equal voting rights. So if multiple CCTLDs in a territory have the same manager, currently many of the IDN CCTLD managers are the same as the ASCII CCTLD manager in each country or territory. Then that manager is considered one member of the CCNSO. So if the CCTLTs have different managers, there will be two equal members. For example, in Egypt, the ASCII CCTLD manager and the IDN CCTLD managers are different. So they have two members. And this solution necessitates the change of the membership definition. And the third one, where a territory has two or more CCTLD managers who are members of the CCNSO, one of those is designated as the representative of the territory for voting in the CCNSO. So this means that in a country or territory which has two or more members, one of them is appointed as a representative of that territory in voting. It's a matter for the members in a territory to designate one member as representative, and that if it cannot be agreed in territory, maybe it's difficult to agree, then some sort of resolution mechanism, such as rotation, is put in place. And the fourth alternative is all ASCII and IDN CCTLD managers are treated as having equal voting rights. This may cause a problem because many IDN CCTLDs, if a territory has many IDN CCTLDs, the territory has many voting rights, more voting rights than the smaller number of IDN CCTLDs territory. So for this point, the working group has a preferred alternative, which is one vote per territory. We have to stick on one vote per territory. That's the working group's consensus. And this can be achieved either through appointing one representative for all members from that territory, or one divided by n vote per member from a territory's n members. And appointing one representative may take time, thus a transition rule needs to be in place for the duration of the local appointment process. And dividing the votes into 1 over n may impact the results and what it represents. So this is not easy to understand. I have 0.2 votes and you have 0.25 votes, and combined votes, well, what does it mean? And to solve this, our staged voting process may resolve the issue of combining votes. First, the votes per territory are counted to determine the vote for that territory. So the territory should have a combined vote which says yes or no. Okay, not 30% yes, 70% no. That's not the solution. A territory should decide whether it says yes or no, definitely. And secondly, the votes are counted on a per territory basis, as usual. Okay. So here we said that the voting can solve the issue at the bottom line. If we have only one vote per territory basis, the eligibility of selection can be solved in the same way. And the quorum. The current bylaw says that the 50% or 60%, 66% or something, which is counted by the CCNSO members as a unit. So in this case, inclusion of IDN CCTLD managers in CCNSO members would go against the concept of equal rights of territories. Of course, equal rights of members, but it it's against the equal rights of territories. So the solution space is, if the principle of one vote per territory is adopted, basically the same solution can be achieved for this also. And scope of PDP. The current bylaw says that the scope of conduct to conduct the PDP is very limited. And it was defined when CCTD was ASCII only. Therefore, we need to check if there are particular characteristics of ID and CCTLDs or ICANN's role vis-a-vis ID and CCTLDs which will require the development of specific ID and CCTLD related policy. In the solution space, so far, the working group found no such point to widen the scope of the PDP. Because IDN CCTLD and ASCII CCTLD should be treated similarly. And no special arrangement regarding policy development for IDN CCTLD should be introduced. Consequently, the working group believes that the scope of PDP does not need to be adjusted to include ID and CCTLDs in the system. So these are the points. And this is a point requiring council's direction, CCNSO council direction, which will be discussed in the CCNSO council tomorrow, which is about the scope of the working group. In the course of the working group discussion, for example, one of the issues identified by the working group is a membership voting mechanism. And on the other hand, the working group found that the CCNSO rules and the guidelines include the procedure relating to membership votes, which may need to be adjusted to the proposed revision of ICANN bylaws. However, according to the charter, the scope of the IDN working group 2 is to focus on the bylaws only. So if needed, at the direction of CCNSO Council, the working group will further look into rules and guidelines as well, and proposes changes to align the rules and guidelines along with the recommendations under the IDN CCPDP by broadening the scope of the working group. It depends on the council direction or decision tomorrow. And this is a final page. A comment thought from you all. IDN PDP Working Group 2 final interim report was published on 22 November. November 22. This was my birthday. And congratulations. We have 2 months public comment period. Especially, are all topics and issues identified? If not, which topics should be included? And should other alternatives be added to resolve an issue identified? Now, what is preferred solution, if any? And we need your input. So give us your comments in this session or to any of working group members. Or send comments to this mail address. Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Hiro. It's complicated, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any questions at this point on that? Or Dave, if he says anything about geographic regions, I'm going to kill him. Yes, Dave?
Just a comment. There is a little bit of an intersection here between two working groups. And I'm talking about the regions one. I don't want to presume to say what the our final working group recommendations will be, or indeed what the board will do with those recommendations. But if I were a betting man, I would say that it is likely that the board wouldn't presume to dictate to organisations such as the CNSS or how they organise their regions, but there is a good chance that they may encourage such organisations to adopt as flexible a view as possible. So if council were to look at the whole issue of voting within the CCNSO, I would encourage them to think out of the box and not necessarily stick to the present method of voting. Like, could council adopt a view more like is done with the board, where the question of diversity is looked at board level rather than trying to do it by constituency?
Sure. The regional aspects are only the regional aspects are relevant only in certain circumstances. They're relevant for council seats because currently the council is regionally divided. So three from each, and then the NomCom. If the number of regions were to increase, for example, just to take that simple example, then we would have to make a consequent change to our bylaw, and we would have to make that would mean a consequent change to the either the number of councillors or the spread of councillors across the various different new regions. So that's one aspect of it. But other than that, regional voting it only comes into play. It doesn't come into play all that often, I don't think. What did you have in mind, Dave? I'm not sure.
Well, at the moment, each region is its own constituency.
Only in the sense of councillors.
Yes.
Not in any other sense.
No, only in the sense of council.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and I think that would be given that the community, ignoring the CCNSO, given that the community itself has regional organisations, with one exception, which are totally independent, effectively, of ICANN, totally independent of the CCNSO, that lends itself to a continuation, to some extent, of that regional focus. I'm not saying, you know, that it's not possible to think outside of those terms, but my concern would be more that if timing works, that we get to this before we get to the region thing, then we just need to make sure that our changes are scalable, so that we don't make changes and then have to go back and necessarily make more changes to the same thing. But accepting that if we were to be in a circumstance where, I mean, what I suppose I'm saying is, if the geographic regions working group was to recommend that there should be no regions, for example, and that an ICANN said to the SO, if you choose to ditch the regions as a concept in your management of the CCNSO, you're free to do so. I suspect that we, at least initially, would say no, we're actually quite comfortable with the regions because it's an easy split for us. But I'm not saying that that's not... but right now, we actually have no choice because the bylaw is clear that that's the regions. Does that make any sense at all in where you were headed?
Yeah. All I was doing was putting a marker down.
Sure.
That if we're looking at voting, we should keep our options.
I couldn't, basically. Absolutely no problem. Yes, Bart?
The level the working group looked at voting was at the level of what will happen for individual CCNSO members. How they're spread across the CCNSO, whether over regions and everything else, was not looked at. So it's only on a per member basis and what will change.
Yeah.
And so what we mean by territory here is, say, you got the basics of one member currently per territory, and that will change. And what is the impact on the bylaws? That's all.
No, absolutely understand completely. It's what you're, I mean, if in an ideal world, we would have the results of both of these at the same time, and then we'd be able to deal with them, the consequent changes. And that maybe that will happen, because we don't know how long this is going to take. Or we know you'll take at least another 3 or 4 years, but we may, in fact, only... Yes, Bart.
There is one aspect that is, I think, Hiro, you mentioned it, which is not taken into consideration, which might change some of these alternatives, is how to deal with variants, if they will be delegated or not.
Don't confuse it anymore.
And it's so we have to wait. This working group has to wait quite some time now before the first working group comes up with a recommendation on the variant management stuff before they can take that into consideration.
Okay, so look, this is obviously important. One second, Giovanni. Oh, no, actually, no, you go ahead, Giovanni. Carry on, please, Giovanni. No, Giovanni.
I just wanted to thank
Hiro
and Bart. Thank Hiro and Bart, because they guided the working group through a not easy process at all, and especially because of the interdependency with the other working group and the difficulties in the bylaws. So thanks a lot. Really great work.
Thank you, Giovanni. This is...
For myself, it was...
What? I wasn't thanking you. I wasn't thanking him on your behalf. I was thanking him on my behalf. It's getting late. Look, this is important, and we're not going to, have a massive discussion about it this afternoon, obviously. But it's important. We need to make sure that members look at this, because this is key core structure stuff that we need to work through, and those of us who have been around since the beginning know how difficult it was to get these things agreed in the first place. So any changes that are as least disruptive as possible are great. So things like maintaining one vote per territory and et cetera, and is always all good. Annabeth.
It's just a question, actually, because I find this really confusing. It's difficult stuff.
Yeah.
But in the Europe region, France has a lot of CCTLDs in ASCII. We have three, but we have one vote in centre and in CCNS, though.
Yes.
So, and it's kind of a pure accident, in a way, from the beginning, who got more TLDs than the others. And it has nothing to do with the size of the country, because they follow the ISO list. When Jan Postel established these things. And now it's also kind of an accident which countries have different scripts, and those who only have ASCII in their script, they will remain with one CCTLD. So
at the moment, yes.
Yes. So, and...
what we're trying to do is...
At least how it is
today. We're just trying to protect the status quo, really, at the moment. Yeah.
So this should also be... point in the discussion.
Absolutely. Sorry. Go ahead,
if you look at the progress or the interim report, this is one of the topics that has been identified. In the sense is, say, what Hiro said is, if you look, say, some of the IDN CCTLDs and the CCTLD, the ASCII CCTLD, are run by the same operator. Now, if the ASCII CCTLD is already a member, the question is, do all rights and obligations apply to the CCTLD manager for both? In your case, and if they apply for them both, then the next step is, what is happening, say, in this case with Norwood, and the other cases is AFNIC. Should you apply the same rule? Because that is a very... If you think it through, there is one very important section in the bylaws that is the does a policy apply to the member? Now you have the weird situation that, say, if you run more than one CCTLD, whether it's IDN CCTLD or an ASCII CCTLD, and only one is member, should the policy apply to the non-members as well, although the entity itself is member? And that's one of the ambiguities that is... It is but that
right, that's why I think this is really complicated.
It's very complicated. You also get the, you could also end up with a... You could also end up with the absolutely fascinating circumstance where, because of cultural challenges around a language or a script, the CCTLD operator of the ASCII would be prepared to be bound by a policy, but the same CCTLD operator operating a non-ASCII one couldn't be because of the cultural problems. It's immensely complicated. But you know, you've got to start somewhere. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. It's getting late and we're tired and we have dinner, so I don't want to go on for too much longer. I just want to do a couple of quick things on the IDN PVP stuff. The first one is that we're going well on the other side, on the policy side, and we're going as well as we can be, as well as can be expected. We have one major thing, which is variance. It keeps coming back and back and back, and none of us has the foggiest idea what a variant is and what we should do about it. We are working on a cunning plan to try and deal with this. We're going to try and set up a technical advisory group, which is going to basically be Patrick Fulstrom, because he's the only techie who speaks non-techie. Ram wants to be involved in a couple of others, so we're going to try and do that, see if we can get clear on variants. Secondly, Kiro's point about asking the council if Working Group 2 should consider the rules and procedures, I suspect very much the council will say yes, there's no point in just doing the bylaws, you might as well do the rules and procedures. Thirdly, Bart and I have sent a paper to the working group dealing with the country names. It's probably best, Bart, if you just very briefly explain. Would you just want me to read this out? Would that be easier?
Yeah,
okay, let me read this out, see if it makes sense. As the scope of the IDN CCPDP is limited to country and territory names in official or designated languages which contain at least one non-ASCII character, the following alternative actions, which are outside the scope of the PDP, may be considered to resolve the issues. The issues being the use of names of countries and territories listed on the ISO 3166 list. We could initiate a new PDP on the use of country names, which would require the current reservation under the new GTLD process to remain in force until the recommendations of that PDP have been implemented. So we could do that. This is all about the discussion we had in the GAC today, right, about geographic country names. We could extend the reservation or blocking of country and territory names under new GTLDs indefinitely, or we could do nothing. Basically, what we're going to do is we sent a note to the council saying, what action do you want us to take in respect to this? There's an argument for saying that if we launched a PDP on country names, then that would have the effect of blocking their use elsewhere. The problem is that is an incredibly complicated, difficult, time-consuming thing to do. So, you know, we really don't know where we are with this, and so the council's going to talk about it. Have we got this on the agenda tomorrow?
No, it's not yet. It's
right,
not yet.
Okay.
Maybe that was clear from this afternoon's discussion. The more you look into it, say, the more you see that there are very, very weird cases. Today's discussion focused on the use of Holland as a meaningful representation of the Netherlands. Mm. That's one question. Another one is, for instance, and that's Annabeth's example, the use of Norvège, which is French for Norway. That is And Norvège includes a non-ASCII letter, but it's outside the scope of the PDP because it's a non-designated language. A third one is, in fact, because .rf in Cyrillic got delegated, what is going to happen with Russia in Cyrillic? Is it open now for the new GTLDs? Do the new GTLDs apply? Should we consider under the PDP reservation or something else? So you see, the more you look at it, for all these different cases, you might end up with different solutions. So there is no solution fit all.
That's right. So the simple argument, and if people were sensible and listened to me, and just did what I say, everything would be fine. Is the simple argument is that what you should be able to do is simply say country names or meaningful representations of countries are placed in a pool, a reserved pool, and that's it. If the IDN CCPDP should decide that a country is entitled to more than one IDN PDP per language, which right now they're not, if we were to decide that they are, then Russia would be available for Russia, obviously, in Cyrillic, because they would be allowed to have more than one in Cyrillic. If we decide that it's not available because they're only allowed to have one, then it should stay reserved. Now, the challenge with that, as we know, is that some governments would say, well, actually, no, we don't want it to be reserved because we might want it as a GTLD. So, we've been around this God knows how many times, and we don't seem to be getting anywhere with the board. If any of you have friends and relatives in the GNSO, talk to them and tell them to say it's all okay. And if you know your government person, your government person is here, and you're unclear what their position is, go and talk to them and get them clear. The problem is sort of solved at the moment in the sense that right now country names, short form and long form country names on the list in the five UN languages are blocked in this round. That's good. That's really good. But it's not actually enough. Okay? The only other thing I wanted to deal with before we pack up is this. Now, there is currently an IDN review going on, an IDN Fast Track staff implementation review going on. It's out for comment, and we need to look at this. There's nothing much in there that's really a problem, but this. And let me just get the other microphone, and I'll read it. So this is about IDN tables, and currently the situation is that you lodge an IDN table when you apply for your IDN CCTLD, or you can rely on somebody else's, right? So if there's one there already, you can say, Annabeth's table is fine, I'll use that. What this says is, historically the content of tables has not been evaluated and approved in any way by ICANN. This includes the IDN tables provided in the fast-track process. Staff does review the received tables in a very limited capacity and only in relation to, for example, obvious errors and to what extent the tables fulfill the requirements. However, there has been discussion in the community that requesters should send in or refer to other IDN tables that already passed through the system, and in that way their lack of a table will not delay the processing of the IDN CCTLD request. In other words, if you want your Cyrillic name, you can use Russia's, refer to Russia's table, right? Okay. Such behavior opens the discussion of whether there should be better or other types of checks in place to review the received IDN tables. I'm not quite sure what the link is there, because I don't see how that behavior does lead to that conclusion, but anyway. The responsibility of serving the community in the best possible way and the most secure way by having measures in place with these IDN tables, including sufficient variant identification and registration rules, which is intended to avoid user confusion, blah, 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 is a primary responsibility of the TLD registry. That's true. The question is, as we open up for more IDNs at the top level, should additional rules be in place? In other words, should ICANN vet your
language table slash approve your language table slash create a whole new process for checking that language tables are okay. Does anybody here think that they should? Cool. So, we need to go back to the bar and tell them to go away. All right? Handled? Happy? Good. No one wants to say anything? It's pretty clear. What was the middle bit again? Well, the question was, do we think that ICANN should be approving language tables? To which I think the answer is no. It's the responsibility of the TLD registry, right? It's not. I mean, ICANN gets the language table, and as this says, they do a couple of checks just to make sure that there aren't any obvious errors and so on and so forth, and that's perfectly fine. We don't have any problem with that. But the concept that there would be a process to put additional rules in place, which effectively means that ICANN gets to approve slash not approve a language table, is the answer is no, isn't it? We don't want them to do that. So I've got Peter and then Annabeth and then Mohammed. See, I knew if I stood here long enough, somebody would ask a question.
No, I do not think that should decide on which on a table, but I think they should definitely encourage language groups to come up with one table.
Oh, I absolutely.
And that should probably be made more clear, because yeah. At the moment it's like the problem when you have one watch, you always know what time it is. When you have two watches, unless they are identically running, which never happens, you have no clue what time it is.
You don't have enough wrists either.
And so the same thing with the tables. And this is, yeah. I think they explained the problem technically yesterday during that late session. There are so many mismatches between the tables that are being sent in that nobody knows which one to trust. So that there is an issue, and probably making sure that they work it out amongst themselves.
But I don't understand why there's an issue. If I'm using my table for my Cyrillic TLD, and you're using your table for your Cyrillic TLD, it doesn't matter because they're two separate tables. In an ideal world, the Arab script would have one table, I agree, and the Cyrillic script would have one table, I agree, in an ideal world. But if you remember back to the discussions we had before the fast track, the Arab states were very clear that they whilst they were committed to having an Arabic script table, that was going to take a very long time, and then in the meantime, they should each, they would talk to each other and cooperate, but they should each come up with their own language table. So I'm not sure that we're being accurately briefed here. But I do agree with you. The encouragement is very important, and that has always been there, but it should maybe be said some more. Okay. Annabeth.
It's actually not about this one. I just got a message from Harald Alvestrand from the other room that Kurt Britz has officially now said that they will change the AG to will comply for the post delegation with good. The court orders.
So. Excellent. Well, that's marvellous. So I don't actually think they had any choice, frankly, but that's a different issue. Yes, Mahal.
Yeah, I think it's not. Approve is not the word, but I think we need to see IANA have more control on the IDN tables submitted to the IDN repository, because it could create confusion, especially when you have a registry submitting lots of different language tables. So that's really great. There is no clear mechanism in that, I think. So we need more control in that for that tool to be useful.
My understanding is with regard to the current rules for the IANA repository of IDN tables that both CCTLDs and ASCII CCTLDs can submit IDN tables. This one is specifically for the IDN table for the IDN CCTLD itself. So there is this link. And so what is weird in my case, that's why, is that this is included in the review of the fast track process, but it's more a general problem on the use and on the rules of the IANA IDN table repository.
If it's for the fast track, I think at least a check could be useful. I mean, a linguistic committee could do that check for the fast track applicant, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay. Yes, Jen. Hang on.
May I ask a question, not IDNA table?
Sure, of course you can.
Variants.
No, I'm not going to talk about variants. It's too complicated.
No, I know.
What would you like?
But my question is very simple.
Yes.
You know, Jack is, publishing the initial report on variants.
Yes.
As you mentioned, as Bart mentioned, the IDN PDP Working Group 1 is going to talk about variants too, right?
Yes.
So, basically my idea is, my question is, I don't know how, it should work. I mean, once we finish our final report on variants, we're going to take it back to our console.
Yes.
Then what's the next step?
Don't know.
Shall we wait until IDN PDP working group have the conclusion on variants?
No, because there are different levels of detail that need to be gone into. So the jig is very much a sort of overarching joint working group looking at things that matter to both, right?
Mm.
And that's very valuable and useful. That then comes back to the council, and that then feeds into the IDN PDP. And we will then use that to continue the work on the specific IDN CCTLD variant issue. Because there are different circumstances that apply in the CCTLD scenario because of overarching requirements such as meaningfulness and so on and so forth. It is not just a technical answer, it's also a political and a policy answer. So we need to take that and put it into the PDP. So you shouldn't wait. You should finish.
So not until we take that into PDP, not until we finish the PDP process, any policy on variants wouldn't be.
I don't know. I mean, it's okay. Up to the council, but I suspect that the council will say, "Let's wait. Let's go through the PDP to come up with any policy on variants."
Okay.
Because I think the two things are so interconnected, it's quite hard to see how you could not do that.
Okay.
But it's up to the council.
Okay.
All right.
And also the same question applied to single character openness.
I think that's different.
Mm.
Because single characters are not
included in
PDP. There's no issue on policy with single characters. It's either meaningful or it's not. If it's a single character that's meaningful and it's allowed, then it's allowed. If it's a single character that's not meaningful, then it's not allowed anyway.
But there is a recommendation in the final report on single character IDN.
Yes.
Because if that's adopted, we need to change fast track. Policy.
Oh, sure. But fast track is not policy, so it can be changed.
And the conclusion of the jig on the single introduction of single character TLDs could be included in the PDP as well, because real outcome of that working group that's relevant is currently the restriction is to one or to two characters, and that should be lifted to one.
Yeah. So basically, you just need to finish, whenever you finish doing what you're doing, whenever you finish the jig, you just send it to the council, obviously, and we'll work out what to do next. But I don't know, I don't have a straight answer for your question right now.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. One more thing, as is Gabby's
constant refrain. She sent out an email to the list, the survey on how today's gone. If you could please fill it out, we would be grateful. It's one of the ways we find out how to make changes and things. The buses are going to dinner from the Hilton at 7:15, and also from here, if anybody wants to hang around. At also 7:15. Yes. Okay. And if we will be reconvening at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, but the councillors, any councillors in the room, we have breakfast with the board tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, somewhere here.
Expo 1.
Right. Downstairs. Thanks very much, everybody. See you later.